So this morning, as we continue our discussion of American politics, we focus on a very complicated topic, and that is the topic of truth. Now, the reason I focus on this is because in the last couple of weeks, and of course, I remind you, we're not talking about a specific political candidate, we're talking about politics in general, but there were two articles in Politico about truth. Both about one particular candidate, but it could be true about other candidates. Fact-checking. Fact-checking is a media favorite pastime. So one particular article here, one of these two articles in Politico, went to fact-check one of the political candidates. So I'll give you a couple of these facts, and then we'll decide whether or not this should be right in the middle there. A $500 billion a year trade deficit with China. That was said by a political candidate at a March 7th rally in Concord, North Carolina. So if you're checking it on your phones, that overstates the case by $134 billion. It's actually, it peaked at $366 billion in 2015. Right.
He was rounding to the nearest.
We don't win a trade, we lose to everybody. A trade, we lose to everybody. In 2015, the U.S. had trade surpluses with a number of countries, including Hong Kong, the Netherlands, the UAE, and Australia. So we don't always lose, according to the facts. We have lousy healthcare, where it's going up 35, 45, 55%. So premiums rose by an average of 5.8% a year since Obama took office, compared to 13.2% in the 9 years prior. If you look at jobs, I'll just give you one more, just Rachmanis. If you look at the jobs reports, which are totally phony, I'm not saying which candidate would speak like this, I'm just saying, because if you stop looking for a job, you're essentially considered employed. So the fact is, in the way the unemployment rate is calculated, discouraged workers who give up on looking for a job leave the workforce, so they don't count toward unemployment, but they don't count as employed either. So there are like pages and pages of facts and what we could call facts, and maybe they are facts. So the question is, when it comes to politics, a lot of people are saying a lot of things. And just driving here this morning, there are accusations between two other political candidates about whether something is true or it's not true. This political candidate says that the other one received contributions from certain special interest lobbying groups, and the other one says, that's not true, and they go back and forth. Is it true or is it not true? So what's the story? So it's a complex story, right? It is a complex story. What does it mean for us when we're looking to understand from a religious standpoint what is truth? And the truth is that it's more complicated than you think. Because as children, we grew up knowing that there's something called truth and there's something called falsehood. But we have an expression, let's say, we have an expression of MS La'amita. It's a rabbinic jargon. Truth to the truthness. Or, I don't know how to translate that exactly. Truth of truth. It's the truth of truth. Emes la'amita, as opposed to what? Like, you've heard this expression. Emes la'amita. It's absolutely true, as opposed to partially true. As opposed to the truth of the falseness. Like, amita shel Torah, as opposed to the... Some other, that's a
good
one.
Well, it could be not untrue, but it doesn't give the true picture.
Okay, so it could be partially true, right? Nothing but the whole truth. Okay, so maybe it distorts the facts. How do you even determine what is true? There was an article, so I collected a bunch of different articles that we'll reference. An article by an Israeli columnist who, his name is Yitzhak Meir, in an Israeli newspaper, pointed out that, first of all, defining truth is not such a simple thing in the first place. Because first you have to come up with a standard. Right? He asked in the article, now we don't use these things, but he talks about a meter. How do you determine what's a meter? You say that this room is, I don't know, 15 meters long, or 10 meters, or 8 meters long. Well, is that a true statement or not? I don't know. What's a meter? So first you have to come up with a standard to decide what it is. In different industries, you have this question, right? I'm sure in some, you know, I don't want to talk about lawyers. That's a whole nother brie of Rabbi Berman and I were having discussions about this. We got a lot of jokes already. It's good. But establishing what is a standard, for example. So the meter, years ago, over a century ago, they had to establish, well, what is and who's going to decide that? Maybe I could come up here with a ruler that's like this long, and I'll say, oh, this is a meter. Who's to say it's not? Right? I walk in and say, I'm a Republican. Are you? I'm a Democrat. Are you? Well, like, what determines? What's the standard? So I want to begin this year at the end. Usually, I would save this to the end, so that in case you have fallen asleep by this point, it will knock you off your chair. But I want to begin with it just to show you how extreme something could be. Now, this shir begins with a very important rabbinic authority, a very important, a great gaon. His name was Rav Dessler, Rav Eliyahu Dessler. So first he was a very influential Rav in England, and then he moved to Israel. He wrote a very important set of works. He must have died, I don't know, in the 60s or 70s, called the Michtav Me'Eliyahu. Now, we have to be very careful when we think about this source. I would say, remembering that this was a great, very pious rabbinic authority, it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to agree. There are other approaches. But look what he explains here. He discusses, in this context, in the Chelek Aleph of Michtav Me'Eliyahu, the episode of Yaakov and Esav. Right? Yaakov comes to his father, and he says to him, Ani Esav Bechorecha. So Rashi already tries to far in for that a little bit. He said, I am, and Esav is your Bechor. Right? A lot of, stuff like that. The bottom line is that Yitzchak says to Esav, Ba achicha b'mirma v'yikach b'rechasecha. Your brother came with shtick, with trickery, and he took your bracha. So how do we view what Yaakov did? We know that Yaakov, we say in the davening, titein, it's based on a pasuk, titein emes le Yaakov. Yaakov is the man of truth. But he's probably the most deceitful of all of the avos. So how do you square that? So Rav Dessler has an unbelievably shocking way of squaring that. In this section, you see on page 1, Mahu emes umahu sheker. What is truth and what is false? So Rav Dessler suggests that it's not what we used to think, which is that when we speak about facts as they are, that's truth. And when we speak about facts and misrepresent them, that's false. No. Look where I put the little arrow. Nimtza she'emes, truth, humashemevi letov ularatzon habore. That is what brings to goodness and to the wishes of Hashem. V'sheker, and falsehood, humashenosein hatzlacha la'asakav shalsar ha'sheker ha'sitra achra. What is truth? Truth is not about fact. It's about result and maybe even motivation. If this thing leads to Ratzon Hashem, the will of God in the world, then that's truth. And if it's in the service of some other end, then that's falsehood. Next page. So how does he conclude? This is the conclusion, right? Yaakov, on the top of the second line, Yaakov asa arma. Jacob did something with trickery. Aval asa bal karcho, against his wishes, second line. Bochev va'anus al piyadibor. He was crying and coerced by God. Lo kivein l'rtzonos atzmo klal. He had no personal interest at all. Rak lohotzi l'foal hatachlis hanirtzem Hashem. Only to actualize that which is the ratzon of Hashem. V'sheker l'shem emes kazeh, a falsehood, a lie for the purpose of truth like this. Who emes? That's emes. Wow. Okay. I'm not saying that is the agreed upon definition of truth, but this truth opens a very wide Pandora's box now.
This says that the ends justify the means.
So, depending, I guess, on what your ends are and what your means are, this is a very...
Like the Crusades, and I'm doing it in the sake of...
All of a sudden now, who's to say? Who's to tell you that that's... You're L'Shem Shemayim, that's the Ratzon Hashem. Now, first of all, obviously, on a practical level, you have to be a prophet, you have to be Rivka Imenu, to know what is the Ratzon Hashem, what is the will of God, that Rivka was the prophetess. She knew that it had to be go down this way. Okay, but whoa. Wow, so now all of a sudden, if you are representing something and you believe that what you're doing is the Ratzon Hashem, so then, well, whatever you represent, well, then, now that's the, I'm saying the truth. That's pretty astonishing. So one of the applications of this, one of the very complex applications of this has to do with how you represent figures, great rabbinic figures, great Jewish figures, and how you share that with the next generation, how you tell that story. So there are many, many great rabbinic authorities, many in the Jewish community, whose opinion is that, wait a second, we're trying to inspire others with stories. So therefore, when you're going to paint the picture of the biography of someone, what's the point of telling the things that were not great about them? You should only tell the good things about them. And if you have a perspective on Avodas Hashem that highlights certain things and excises others, so certainly you should excise those other things that maybe they did that don't fit exactly what you think is the Ratzon Hashem. So for a much longer discussion about this, and we'll come back to him in a minute, one of my teachers, I emailed him this week to tell him that I reviewed his article, Rabbi Jacob J. Schachter. He has a 77-page article. You can get it online. It's not a secret. It was published in Torah Mada called Facing the Truths of History. It's about this question. It's about revisionism when we tell stories and we represent what was and what wasn't. So the Chazon Ish, of all people, the Chazon Ish was one of the greatest rabbinic authorities of the 20th century. He died sometime in the 50s, lived in Bnei Brak. He never held a formal position, but undoubtedly when you read his Sfarim, you see he was literally one of the greatest Gaonim in many generations. Chazon Ish has a letter that's here on page 3 that does not seem to accept, or on one level doesn't accept. You could argue that no, he does accept Rav Dessler in a different way. He's writing a letter. We don't know who the letter is authored to. Rav Chazon Ish, Rav Avram Yeshaya Karelitz. This is in the second chelik of Igros of the Chazon Ish. So he's writing to someone, he's speaking about someone. He says, I'm not sure, maybe I violated Lashon Hara. Nonetheless, look at what the Chazon Ish writes here with the arrow. Im ki daiti, my thinking, ki roi lamachazikim b'toras Hashem, it is worthy that those who grasp in the Torah of Hashem, ledas es gedoleo b'ofim ha'amiti, that you should know the gedolim of previous generations, though the great leaders that we look to, in their emes. What is emes? Emes, says the Chazon Ish, is factual truth, not agenda-driven, not mission-driven truth. V'im hutar ledaber, look what he writes, Lashon Hara, al uman b'umnaso. Someone calls me about a plumber, and they want to know, how's your plumber? Am I allowed to say, well, my plumber does this and this well, and he does this and this not well? Is that permitted, or is that Lashon Hara? That's permitted, because I'm responsible to give the person the good advice. Says the Chazon Ish, if I could speak truthfully about a plumber to represent them, so if I'm speaking about the Chafetz Chaim, if I'm speaking about Rav Kook, if I'm speaking about Rav Chaim Ozer, the greats of our generation, should we not tell their lives honestly? La'amito? To the way that it really was? Even though it's negative. La'ish hadorish olav letzorech, somebody who's asking me about the plumber because he needs a bathroom fixed. Al misha torasa umenusa lo kol shekein shemuta lohoti ala machzikim betorah v'tzrichim ladas ki ha'yidia shel chachmei ador libo mibidasim heim hein gufei Torah. The great Jewish leaders who we look to, their lives, not mine and not yours, but theirs, are the models that we look to of how to lead our lives. So shouldn't we tell it like it is? Not like we would want it to be, but like it is. Because the same way that you're going to a plumber to get a particular service, you should know what the full picture of that plumber is about. So if you're looking at the great Gedolim, shouldn't you be able to get the right picture of who they are? So it seemed to me that... Okay. So there is a step here. What's the step? What am I missing?
It's a question of what's relevant to the advice that you're giving, right? If somebody asks you whether somebody's a good plumber because they want to get their toilet fixed, you probably wouldn't be able to tell them Well, he's not a very good auto mechanic.
Right.
Because that's not relevant.
Right.
So if you're trying to, you know, get some example from, you know, a gadol to hear about things that they were not so good at is, in fact, counterproductive to...
Why? Why?
Because the goal is to have an example of positive things, and to lay out the negative things is counterproductive.
So that's my question.
Or
why?
Irrelevant.
Well, is it really irrelevant? Because if what we're saying is that the way that we view a great gadol is not just in their role as, you know, filling this function. Because when we're talking about a plumber, we're only looking at it in terms of things that are relevant to plumbing. But when we look at the rabbinic leaders who are great gadolim over generations, we don't look at them just in terms of, okay, what was their capability of giving a shiur? We look at it as the person was so suffused with Torah that it impacts and shapes their whole personality. So then you could make the argument, which is what the Chazon Ish, I think, is making here, is that there's no such thing as saying, well, this part is not relevant to the discussion. Because if we're looking at that person as a role model, then you really need to look at the whole person. Because that's what we're looking at as the role model. And therefore, you have to look at it in its honest way. Now, it happens to be there's also another educational benefit to looking at it that way, which is there is the danger of misrepresenting gadolim as saying it was all easy, it came naturally, they never had any challenges, and that totally disempowers the rest of us, because we say, oh, he knew all of Shas when he was 9, and he never had to work hard, and he never fell down, so then, of course, for me, it's not relevant. So there's, of course, that negative aspect of misrepresenting it. But I think the Chazon Ish is saying is that when you ask about the gadol, every aspect of their personality is pertinent, because if they're really a gadol, then their personality should be completely transformed by the Torah experience. And therefore, every part of it is relevant. That's the step. So you're right, it's not necessarily relevant. There's a jump here. If I'm going to tell one story about Rav Soloveitchik, so then that one story could ignore everything else. But if I was writing a biography of Rav Soloveitchik, if I was writing the kind of this life sketch of someone, so then what's truth? Is truth just taking the parts of their life that are relevant to promoting what I want to view, which is the Ratzon Hashem? Now, it could be that you could say that the Chazon Ish will agree with Rav Dessler and say, yeah, it's Ratzon Hashem to paint them in their 100% honest light, honest the way we use it in the vernacular. Or he could say, no, maybe it would be better off, maybe educationally we'd be better off not telling that he did this, that, and the other thing. Maybe we'd be better off. But it's not emes. That's not emes, says the Chazon Ish. And therefore, emes dictates that you have to tell the truth.
Well, if he told the truth, even the bad with the good, I mean, it would give a better picture. Just said everybody's human.
Exactly. So that, I'm saying, is a utilitarian reason to tell the truth. But I think what the Chazon Ish is saying more than that is that it's not just because ultimately it's going to carry the day, the people will find out or whatever, there are some other benefits which we'll come back to. But I think what we're looking at here are two definitions of truth.
But how is emes to me is no emes to you?
So that's exactly the thing. If you go with Rav Dessler's definition of truth, then it's the sliding scale when and who defines what's truth based on what's the Ratzon Hashem. That's what's very difficult about that. According to the Chazon Ish, we know what emes is. Emes is factual. Now, whether you choose to tell that or not is a good question. According to the Chazon Ish, you should tell it because that's part of the... It's part of the...
But doesn't that make, you know, factual accuracy... an override to Lashon Hara?
Oh, very good. So in this context, the Chazon Ish is saying that it's not Lashon Hara. When I get the call about the plumber, it's actually, the Chafetz Chaim will say, and this comes up sometimes in Shiduchim, things like that, someone will call you. So I once asked Rav Schwartz Shlita about this. I said, how do you navigate, you know, someone calls you about information? So he said, look, you have to balance, because you're right. On one hand, there's the Lashon Hara concern. On the other hand, there's what we call Lifnei Iver, misleading people. You say about certain thing or a certain person X, but they're really Y, you are setting them up for a big problem potentially. So in that case, the Chazon Ish is exactly saying, and then he continues on, he says, you have to have zehiras yaseir, you have to have utmost caution when you do this. You can't be cavalier about it because you are dealing with potential Lashon Hara when you speak about something negative. But in that case, it's not Lashon Hara. And this is what I would argue is the way that other Mefarshim would answer the claim of Rav Dessler, and this is what we'll talk about it in a few minutes. What Yaakov Avinu did was not emes, it was sheker. It was sheker. But it was sheker that was necessary. Because sometimes we have to sacrifice one value for others. And there's no such thing as saying there's only one value in any given circumstance. And we'll get to that in a second. But to prove this point that it's not one or the other, there are two interesting psukim in Tehillim. Take a look on page 5. I think there is what to be said for looking at possible multiple truths. The pasuk says in Perek Nun Zayin, "Ki gadol ad shamayim chazdecha, ve'ad shchakim amitecha." It is great until the heavens your kindness, and until the upper heights, shachak is way high, amitecha is your truth. Okay. Now look at the next page. Later, kufches. Ki gadol me'al shamayim chazdecha. It is above the heavens your kindness, va'ad shchakim amitecha, until the upper heights your truth. So both of these talk about chesed and emes. The psukim are kim'at parallel, except for one word. What is the one word that differs between the two verses? Yeah. Yes. First pasuk said what?
No.
Ad. Until. The second verse says me'al. Yeah. So the word is said in the context of the chesed part, but it's being parallel here to the emes. Well, which is it? Is the chesed and the emes that's being represented here, is it to the heavens or is it above the heavens? Well, maybe it depends. Maybe sometimes the chesed and maybe even sometimes the emes has a limit and maybe there's something above. So that's what the Gemara Pesachim, next page on page 7, the Gemara Pesachim says, well, Rava asked this question, so he answers, it depends whether or not you're doing something lishma, a mitzvah that is with the perfect intent, on page 7, versus shalol lishma. He asked this question, and he said, kam ba'osin lishma, kam ba'osin shalol lishma. So what does that mean now? A person does a mitzvah, and they do it without the right intention. So did they do the mitzvah? What would you say, truthfully, did they do the mitzvah? Yes, but they didn't do it with the full intention. Somebody, then you compare that to the person who really did it with kavana, with intent, with preparation. Did they do the mitzvah? Well, truthfully, is that the same accurate mitzvah representation? No. So which is the truthful fulfillment? So the Gemara says, well, to a certain degree, they're both true. But one is ad hashamayim, one is just, you know, over here, and the other one is me'al. So you could have two mitzvos, they look to the outsider like the same, but they're different. Which one is a true mitzvah? The answer is, well, they're both true, but there's a different element there. So maybe it's not so simple. We, of course, we're accustomed to emet uvdatit, we call it in Hebrew, factual truth. Maybe that's not so simple. But maybe, sometimes, truth is relative.
But you don't have the distinction on the truth part of the passage.
Right. So
you only have it on the chesed part.
Exactly. So you could say that analogy is that connection, but then the question is why is that? What, maybe that's exactly the point, that it's a constant, and then the chesed is whether you get the credit or not. Could be. If you look at the Ramban on page 8, you get a further development of this idea. Right? We start out by saying that according to Rav Dessler, truth depends on the mission. According to the Chazon Ish, truth depends on the facts. Now we're saying maybe there's somewhere in the middle. The Ramban is a very interesting idea. When it comes to learning, is it possible to prove the truth? Amita shel Torah, there's a truth. There's a divine truth out there. Can you prove it? So the Ramban wrote a book. The Ramban, Nachmanides, lived in the 13th century. We've spoken about him at length in the past. One of our amazing, my personal favorite, huge, amazing heroes. So the Ramban wrote a book, one of his works, which is a super commentary. Meaning, there was an initial commentary in the back of the Vilna Shas called Rav Yitzchak Alfasi, the Halachos, the Baal Halachos. He wrote a summary of the Gemara. Then on the side of that, there was a commentary by a Provence, a great Gaon, named Rav Zrachya Halevi. And he criticizes a lot of the things that appear in the Ramban, in the Rif. So it's Rif, Rav Yitzchak Alfasi, and then Baal HaMa'or, the Ma'or HaKatan, Rav Zrachya HaLevi. Well, the Ramban comes along, and he says, look, oh, basically, much of what he, the Rav Zrachya HaLevi, does not agree with the Rif, the Baal Halachos, is wrong. So he writes a commentary on the Rif, refuting all of the claims, essentially, of the Baal Hamor. And he's not the only one who did that. The Ravid, Rav Avram ben David of Posker, did that. So there's like this tension going on between the Baal Hamor, Rav Zerachi Alevi, and the Ramban. And the Ramban's job is, it's called Melchamos Hashem. What is that? How would you translate that?
War.
The War of God! All right, we're going to go to war against this rabbinic scholar who criticizes the Rif, and we're going to defend the Rif. So you would think that his commentary, and he is, the Ramban was one of the greats, the great of the greats. So he's going to bring out the heavy guns and completely decimate the Baal HaMa'or. Mamish, flatten him. And he tries. But before he tries, he says, I want you to understand something. When it comes to learning, there's no such thing as a TKO. What do you mean there's no such thing? Either a pshat is MS, or it's not MS. What do you mean? Ramban says, look, in the underline, Yodea kolome Talmudenu. Anybody who learns Talmud knows, in the underline here where the arrow is, this is in the Ramban's Hakdama to his commentary, Malchamas Hashem, She'in b'machlokes mefarshav rayos beruro gemuros. There is no such thing as an ironclad proof that will absolutely, completely demolish the other position. So therefore, when you read my commentary, don't think that I think that I completely decimated my opponent here, the Baal HaMa'or. The Melchamas is taking on the Baal HaMa'or. He says, don't think that I'm 100% right. Don't think that what I'm saying is emes and what he's saying is sheker. Because when it comes to learning, it's hard to prove. And those of us who have had this blessing of opportunity to learn, let's say you go to yeshiva, you have two chavrusa sitting at a table, and they're arguing. So how does the argument end? Well, one chavrusa thinks they got it right, and the other one thinks they got it right. You have machlokas that appears in Shulchan Aruch. Well, which side is right? The answer is, we don't know. You can't prove it. It's teku sometimes. But even when it's not teku, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, it's not that we say that the other opinion is absolutely false. So now, it's actually more complicated than we thought, because really there could be multiple approaches of emes. Right? You have a machlokes. Well, which side is emes? Which one is right? The only time that you're going to have in the Gemara a real machlokes where one side is emes and the other side is sheker is when you have a machlokes, a historical machlokes, what did this person say? Sometimes you have a machlokes where one amor will say, oh, they said ploni, they said aser, they said chayav, and another one will say, oh, I heard they said this. So then, either it was or it wasn't. It's a factual argument. But Ramban is pointing out that when it comes to learning, saying, I hold the truth, Rav Schwarzlita once told me, he said, that somebody gave a pshat, and then they said, this is the Amita Shel Torah. Amita Shel Torah. To the exclusion of other, Rav Schwartz said, that statement, that dramatic flourish made him very uncomfortable. He says, how do you know that you have the Amita Shel Torah? Maybe you think it's Amita Shel Torah, but who's to say that that's necessarily the Amita Shel Torah?
Well, there's a difference between fact and truth.
Okay, this is the problem.
This is Hillel and Shammah. Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody thinks they've got it right. But
exactly. So isn't that demonstrating that what we started with, which was that the presumption is that emes is fact, is not?
Maybe we need more words.
Okay.
The word emet, the truth, doesn't appear. Maybe they're not all talking about the same thing.
Okay, good. Right, so maybe we do. And that's part of maybe going back to where we started with the politics. Maybe there's a difference between facts, like statements that have to do with numbers. Like a political candidate says, this is the number, and it's just not the number, versus representing something.
Between values, truth of facts.
Okay, good.
But isn't this whole concept, let's say, of the ad and mayal is an issue they call through halacha in general. I mean, go to mitzvah and hider mitzvah.
Absolutely. That's exactly what the Gemara is trying to say.
Did I do the mitzvah, or...
Exactly.
If you buy this really nice esrog, you have a better mitzvah.
Exactly.
There's a correlation, it seems to me. Okay.
That exactly. So that's for sure true. That Gemara of Mitoch Shel, of Lo Lishma and Lishma is a perfect parallel to multiple levels of Kiyama Mitzvah when it comes to Hidur Mitzvah, for sure. So maybe we need different language for that.
But now, aren't there places in the Gemara where they'll say, I heard from so-and-so that this was
was what he said.
Yes.
But he didn't really say it. And they said it, they just said it because they thought they wanted to strengthen the opinion of what they thought was right. You didn't get that.
So I'm trying to remember. I can't think of a simple example, but that's where the factual and non-factual plays more, because there they're saying I heard it in the name of, rather than the strength of the argument.
No, right. But I'm just saying there are times in the Gemara where you would say, well, that's according to Reb Dashkin,
right?
Because they're basically admitting
that they're misrepresenting it. Right. I can't think of a good example.
Yeah, but you know.
So look at page 9 for one more complicated wrinkle, which we could spend really a whole shiur on this in and of itself. A couple of months ago, we had the privilege here in Chicago in Skokie to have Rabbi Rosenzweig. Actually, he does the Rabbi Rosenzweig before he was here in Or Torah for Shabbos with the Rebbetzin. So he came to the Kol on Friday and he gave us a little shiur. So he alluded to this sugya, which in the beginning of Maseches Sanhedrin, which we're not going to talk about at length, but it's the subject of a whole article in Tchumen and a whole discussion that he had. This is the sugya of Pshara. Pshara is compromise. Two people go to a Din Torah. They have an argument over $1,000. So the Gemara says in the bottom, Rav Huna used to say to them, "E dina pu'isu, e pshara pu'isu." Would you prefer we give you the din, the law, or pshara? Pshara is compromise. Now compromise, it's more like, it's not so much compromise, it's more like arbitration, where the rabbis decide based on a sense of equity and fairness. So it doesn't necessarily mean, when you go for pshara, let's say you go to the CRC Besdin, and you have a dintor with someone, and you ask them for a pshara, which is what they usually push for, based on this Gemara, so that doesn't mean it's a 50-50 split. It means what the dayanim think is equitable.
It's settlement.
I don't know, arbitration, is that a settlement? Not, I mean...
arbitration mediation? One, you have to listen.
Mediation is not binding.
Right.
That's the key
binding.
Word. Binding.
So arbitration is binding.
So
is it arbitration?
Yeah, the rabbis decide what's fair, and then they, if it's a case of pshara, and then they hand down the decision, and you agree, you write it, you sign the document that you're going to agree to their authority.
And why can't that be what the din is?
So that's not necessarily what the din is. The din might say that this person is chayav $1,000, but there are other extenuating circumstances that are not, there are extra legal factors that would play, which is exactly what this Gemara is talking about, which is really like a series of shiurim
maybe
to discuss.
You should have known this person wasn't responsible. So
a lot of different. This is a very, very complex topic, but just to boil it down to one point, which is what I think is the core question that's going to be relevant for us to oversimplify in a criminal way right now. You can ask the basic question: is pshara, is compromise, a miscarriage of MS?
No.
Is it a destruction of MS?
Dina.
Or, and because din is MS, or maybe, and this is what we're not going to talk about, but this is what Rabbi Rosenzweig was developing in the Shir, and this also appears in an article in Tchumen, the 25th volume, they have a discussion of this issue. There's a lot more to say about this. Maybe pshara is a higher form of MS, of din. Maybe in a certain light, if you use certain factors as part of the decision-making process, because you put that into the mix, well, maybe it's not the din conclusion, which would have been A pays B $1,000. Maybe it's A pays B $700. So is that not MS? No, maybe it's a new kind of MS. It's MS based on pshara, rather than MS based on din. So we usually think, let's say if you were to open this Gemara, you go to this Gemara in Shas, you open the first time, you say, oh, there's a concept called compromise. Well, compromise means it's not by the books, so to speak. It's not based on what the law itself would dictate. So you might say, oh, that's not MS. That's not the din. Well, maybe that is a form of din. Maybe there are multiple forms of truth. There's one truth that's the result of din, of the law, and then there's another truth. That's the result of a pshara.
Yeah, but nobody believes that law is really justice.
Really?
Yeah. If you look at law, it's not about justice. It's just the rules you have, so you're going to have something to follow. But equity is a much better way to make a determination.
I'm not sure that the halacha agrees with that statement. I think the halacha requires that justice be fair. And I think that's the system of halacha is to set up a fair system.
Isn't it a question of if you go for a deen,
yes,
right, then somebody is either...
somebody has to be right and somebody has to be wrong. In other words,
well, not always. It's not always binary. But it could be questions of proportion. Let's say the din would say yachloku, you should split it. Because sometimes they'll have this. The din will say yachloku 50-50, and the pshar will say it'll go 70-30.
But if you're talking about a factual question, and you're trying to determine, okay, does he own the money or does he not own the money? And so I would think that the difference between din and pshara is, you know, if you get to the point, you know, a judge has to make a decision. Right? And a judge in a court doesn't get to say, oh, split it.
Well, the halacha does sometimes.
No, but
right.
If you're saying deen,
okay, yes,
right, you have to make a decision. You have to say this one is. I believe this one. I don't. That by definition means you don't believe the other one. You don't have to say it that way, but you're gonna fine for someone, and the pshara says I can say, well, I think 60% likelihood of this guy, so we're gonna split it 60-40.
But here's the thing. You can have a case of din where they will split it. The Gemara says, Shnaim Ochs and Betalis, the first Mishnah Bava Metzia, two people are holding on to something, and will say, Yachloku. And the din will be, they should split it.
But that's not equity. That's then a narrow circumstance where the din and the pshara may have the same answer.
They may, but they may not. There may be other factors where in a simple, straight-up Shnaim Ochs and Betalis case, it may be 50-50, or some other example like that, where the din is yachloku, because there are some cases like that in Bava Metzia, where the din is yachloku, they have to split it. Or let's say, chatzi nezek is another example where you may end up with a 50-50 split, according to the din.
Right.
But the pshar may dictate something else. I don't want to get into the weeds on this case, because it's really worthy of its own shir. I'm just bringing it up because what Achronim are starting to discuss in this context is exactly this question. This is another example of, is MS just the facts? Just the facts, ma'am? Right? Or is MS potentially something else? Is din the only way to achieve truth, or is pshara another way? Whether or not they're overlapping or not. So what I'd like to point out is that I think even though there are some semantic issues, I think there's one huge nafkamina between a lot of these discussions, especially between the understanding of Rav Dessler and the understanding, the way we presented it, of the Chazon Ish and others. If you say like Rav Dessler, that truth is subjective and that it's based on the mission, the purpose of what you're doing, so then what Yaakov did was emes, and then whatever you represent as the Ratzon Hashem is emes, I think there is a potential long-term harm of that definition.
Taliban.
Well, that's one. That's certainly one potential. But there is another one. And that is that at a certain point, what you're representing as emes may actually be found to be not emes. And then what happens? As opposed to, if you say, what I'm doing now is sheker, but I have a counterbalance, in the long term, that may be healthier. Let me explain what I mean. Until now, we've been talking about MS and trying to figure out, well, is MS factual and fixed, or are there multiple approaches to MS? And we saw that the Gemara seems to say that there are, you know, lishma and shalom lishma, multiple MSs in that regard. We saw that according to Ramban, when it comes to Talmudic proofs, it's not always one MS and the other. MS and pshara is a question. But now, even when we have factual MS, what happens when that conflicts with another value? I'll give you three examples. The first one is the Gemara in Yevamos, source number 10, that some of you have heard of. The Gemara says, Amar Balaz, Rib Ilah, Bishon Rab Elazar ben Shimon, Mutar lo la'adam l'shanos bedavar hashalom. A person is permitted to change for the purpose of peace. For example, they tell you the story in the end of Bereishis, Avicha tziva kosom ruli Yosef. The brothers, after the death of Yaakov, say to Yosef, guess what? Dad said you should forgive us. According to the Gemara, he never said it. But the brothers said it. Why did they say it?
They were afraid.
To bring people together, to make peace. And similarly, the Gemara says, even God did that. When he says to Avram, you know, Sarah said that I'm really old, I can't have another child. What did she really say? She says, he's really old. Okay, so what is this Gemara telling us? The Gemara is telling us when you have a conflict, when you have two values, you have two needs, you have the need for emes. Chosamo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu emes. We mentioned this a couple of weeks ago in a different context. God's sign, his seal in this world is truth. It's an accurate representation. Emes is crucial. That's why when the Pasuk says not to lie. The pasuk does not say lo l'shaker. What does the pasuk say? Midvar sheker tirchak. Should stay far away from it. Not just don't lie, but stay far away from any lies, because lying is terrible. Lying is the end of trust and the end of society and the end of relationships. But sometimes truth comes in conflict with peace, with harmony. So here's an example of where I think the distinction between the Chazon Ish and Rav Dessler is important. Is the Torah saying it's good, is the Gemara saying it's good to lie perpetually for the purpose of peace? It's saying, what you're saying, you should know it's a lie. And it actually doesn't even say lie, it says lashanos, means to adjust it. And that's why, generally speaking, when we do this, we should try not to say an outright lie. Should kind of bend the truth a little bit. But knowing that it's still not emes, and that it's being sacrificed, means that tomorrow, you're not going to live in that same reality. You know what you said was not true. You had to say it for a specific reason. But you're not going to fool yourself into thinking that that's the truth. Because that's dangerous. Then tomorrow, you're going to start living your life based on a lie. And then you know what happens? After that continues and continues, then it really gets you into a lot of trouble. There's an old story about Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman tells an amazing mashal. There was a king, and he had a very trusted servant, and there was a famine. And the only grain that was left in the kingdom, and this story is mamish, very, very deep, far beyond what I can understand. The only grain was left in the kingdom was grain that if you ate it, you became insane. That's the story of Rav Nachman. So the advisor comes to the king, he says, "Sir, we have no choice. We have to keep ourselves alive, so we have to eat the grain that's going to make us insane." So the king says, "Okay, here's what we're going to do. Let's take some red paint, and you're going to put a dot on your head, and I'm going to put a dot on my head, so that tomorrow, at least we'll know that we're insane."
I think he ate some of it already.
It's a very deep mashal, a very deep mashal. A person, Rachmana Litzlan, who starts distorting the truth and then believing it, gets themselves in a lot of trouble. As opposed to, you may have to distort the truth right now, for this one particular limited circumstance, but don't think it's true. Because then you're going to go living in a warped reality. Here's another example. Page 11. An amazing medrash. Unbelievable medrash. Rav Siman. B'shah shebar ha'akash baruch hu livros es ha'adam harishon nasa malachi asharis kitim kitim v'chaburos chaburos. When God went to create man, they got into groups. There was a convention. Delegates. We're lobbying the Rabboni Shel Olam. Mehem Omrim, some of them said, Al Yibare, don't create man. Umehem Omrim, Yibare, good idea. As it says, Chesed ve'emes nivgoshu, Tzedek v'chsholom nashaku. Chesed Omer, Yibare, shugom ha'chasadim. Chesed said, create man, because he's going to do Chesed. Ve'emes Omer, and truth says, Al Yibare, Shekulo Shkarim. He's lying. Man always lies. Don't create him. Shalom Omer. I'm sorry, Tzedek Omer. Goodness. Kindness says, Yibari, let him be created. Shu Osit Stakas. People do righteous things. Shalom Omer Al Yibari. Peace says, bad idea. Dekule Ktata. There's always fighting. Me'asa, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? Natal Emes. V'hishlicho la'aretz. And he threw it to the ground. This is Chicago style. You have a stalemate? Just take one of them and, you know, do away with it. So the Rebbe Shalom took MS and said, forget about it. Truth, not so important. So now we have 2 verses 1. Now we have Shalom who says not. But at least you have Chesed and Tzedek that says yes. So, very good. That's a good way to do it. Wow. This medrash, by the way, could be the topic for one whole shiur. Multiple ways to unpack this. So Rabbi Schachter, I mentioned before, earlier this year, he gave a shiur to all the Chavri HaKolo. And he gave over a tremendous vart from his father, Zichron Levracha. Rabbi Herschel Schachter. Yeah, from our Kola. He gave us, you know, we have video conference rooms sometimes from personalities in YU. It's amazing. So he said a vart from his father, just passed away, I think about 2 years ago, Rabbi Herschel Schachter. He's well known because he was a very prominent Rav in New York. He was one of the liberators. He was the chaplain with liberators of Buchenwald. A lot of stories about Rabbi Herschel Schachter, Zichron Levracha. So Rabbi Schachter said, you know what this medrash tells you? Sometimes there is an important project. There's an important initiative that needs to take place. There is something valuable. And there are a balance of factors at play. He says, don't let emes, the strict emes, impede you from accomplishing your goal. You know, Ladugma, when the Kolo started here, when we moved here 8 years ago, the Kolo started in an enormously humongous deficit. So Emes would say, Al Yibari, don't start a Kolo when you're operating in a deficit. But sometimes you have to take the Emes, the numbers, the facts, and put them aside. So that's a drush, but this is another example of where the Rabbono Shlomo says you have competing factors. You have Chesed and Emes. So in this context, Chesed wins out. Does that mean that you should live your life as a sheker? No. It means in this circumstance, you need to put Emes aside for the benefit of a different value. And here's one more case. Page 12, famous machlokas. It's a good thing we passed on this shaila. Ton Rabbon on the rabbis learn the Gemara and Tezayin on the base and Kesubis on the bottom. Kates and Meraktim lifnei akala. How should you dance in front of a bride? Beishamai Omer, Beishamai says, you know what you say? Kala kamos shehi. The kala, you call her like you see her. That's it. Emes. Those of us who have married off children, we don't paskin like this. Beis Hillel Omrim, Beis Hillel says, Kala Noah Vachasuda. I've never been at a wedding where they start dancing Kala Kamol Shihi. It's always Kala Noah Vachasuda. That's how we paskin. Why? So what does Beis Shammai say? Beis Shammai says, look, Midvar Sheker Tirchuk. You got to call it like you see it. Now, it doesn't mean you have to say, you have to dance at the wedding and say, the kala has an ugly dress. You don't have to do that. But you can say, maybe she has very nice ears. Maybe. So you could say that. According to Beis Shammai, if you went to Beis Shammai's wedding, you better be ready. You just better be ready, because Midvar Sheker Tirchuk, don't...
He just holds that as the highest value. There are no other competing.
That's it? MS is MS.
There are no other
values. Well, in this case, it's maybe that I can't say that there are no other values, but certainly when it comes
that
to
value wins.
Exactly, and Beis Hillel says
that we don't usually follow him.
That's right. We
but
almost
that
never follow.
It's so subjective.
What's that?
It's so subjective.
That's also true. Exactly. So Kala Kamoshi does not mean saying that she's ugly. Maybe she's beautiful, and it's your Kamoshi as you see it. There are a lot of darshanim. You can make a lot of Sheva Brachas Torahs from this Gemara. It's very good. But without getting too far afield into the Sheva Brachas, what's Beis Hillel saying? Is Beis Hillel saying, first of all, Beis Hillel saying, don't lie. But Beis Hillel saying, Kala Noa Vachasuda. It's Rashi says, Chud Shel Chesed Mashachala. There's an element of grace, of kindness about her. You don't have to say, she's mamish beautiful. You just say nice things. So this is an example of where, according to Beis Hillel, and this is how we follow, the truth is going to take it. Yeah, we don't talk about the chassan. You know, that's it. Don't talk about the chassan. That's for sure. Don't say anything about him. So this is another example of where we take MS and we put it aside for a different value. But here again is what I would say. There was a... I don't know if anybody has one of these at home. So if you are, I'm not passing judgment on it. But there's something called a skinny mirror. Skinny mirror.
In stores they have it.
In stores they have it. It's
good to have.
I say, some say. But some might say, look, there is a problem potentially with a skinny mirror in a store. What's the problem with a skinny mirror in a store?
It's like having a false weight.
That's right. So right now, you might say skinny mirror is a good thing, because one of the problems that we have in society is that we have problems with self-esteem, self-concept. Now, I'm not saying that a skinny mirror is a good way to deal with the problem of self-concept, but leaving that aside, one tool that people might use to deal with the problem of self-concept is a skinny mirror. Okay. But if you misrepresent something, in a certain consistent way. So then are you living with reality or are you running from reality? You're not really getting it, because what's going to happen, this is the danger of misrepresenting something as emes in perpetuity, is that when you look at a different mirror, when you go to another store, all of a sudden, I'll be honest, I try to avoid stores. I wasn't really sad when Lohmann's closed, Nechama was broken, but I was mamish not sad. I don't miss the Lohmann's dressing room at all. I don't know anything that was going on over there, but apparently that was like a whole experience. I don't miss that. I don't, whatever it is, you have to know what the emes is. Because if you don't know what the emes is, one day you're going to find it. One day you might not be in front of the skinny mirror, you might be in the run of the regular mirror, and then all of a sudden what's going to happen? Then you feel like, oh my gosh, I've been living a lie! And you know what? For some people that's okay, and for a lot of people that's not okay. If you represent the picture of a gadol as always being perfect, as never having failed or struggled or made mistakes, then when you find out that they did make a mistake, then what happens? If it's been represented to you that it's always emes and it's always perfect, when you find out that that's not actually factual, so for some people that's okay, they can reframe it, but from other people, that's going to be a crisis of faith. That's going to be a crisis of trust. If you misrepresent something in a relationship or in a deal, and you do that for a good reason, there's a legitimate reason to do that, maybe there's a good reason for that today. But if you constantly misrepresent it, if you're living in a life that's not emes, so that I think ultimately it's going to crumble. Someone's going to find out one day that that mirror was a skinny mirror. And then what happens? So let's conclude. We're going to skip page 13 because we don't have time. This is Rav Soloveitchik's discussion in Lumdus. This is from his Shiurim and Shavuos about Midvar Sheker Tirchak. But I want to make 2 points in conclusion. One is that just because something is MS does not mean you have to broadcast it. The Gemara says, the Mishnah says in Megillah, Daf Chaf Hei Amud Aleph, Maisa Ruvain Nikra V'lo Matargim. The story of Ruvain and Bila is read in shul, but in the old days they used to have a translator who used to stand at the bima and read it out in the Targum so that people could understand. You skip that in the translation. Why? Because of the potential misunderstanding of what's happening in that story. So it's better to leave the masses ignorant. So is that a misrepresentation of truth? Is that a sheker? So if they didn't hear the Hebrew, if they don't understand the Hebrew, and they went through it very quickly, so the translator may summarize and skip that element. And the Gemara goes on. The Gemara says, "Maisa Egel Rishon Nikro Matargim Vashen Nikro V'lo Matargim." The first story of the Egel is written and translated, but the next one is not out of the covered for Aaron. Birkas Kohanim is Nikro V'lo Matargim because it might sound like God is favoring the Jewish people, etc., etc. A whole bunch of examples. So I think you take two important takeaways from this Gemara, this Mishnah. One is that just because something is true doesn't mean you have to broadcast it. You're not misrepresenting the truth, you're just not translating it. But there's also a flip side. It doesn't mean that you rewrite the Torah. The Torah will always be MS, it will be written there. You don't have to say it, but it doesn't mean that you go back and take it out of the story. That's a huge distinction. Sometimes, I once heard this from my Rebbe, Rav Meir Tversky. They talk in a discussion about sexual abuse, Rahmanul Islam. And they had a forum about it. The question was how to use the language. So it's interesting that the Torah sometimes uses explicit and graphic language that's, I don't want to use the word vulgar, but it's not proper. And for that, we have a Creek sieve. The way it's written in the Chumash is different than the way it's said by the Baal Kori. In the Chumash, it said Yud, Shin, Gimel, Lamed, Nun, Hey, which is pronounced Yishgalena, about a woman being abused. And the way that we read it is Yishkavena. So sometimes you need to use terminology that's more refined when you speak in public. But the fact that you use different terminology does not mean that you distort what it is. That you misunderstand what it is, that the facts change. It doesn't mean you have to use that language, but you have to know what you're dealing with. In some way, that's kind of the idea here of Nikra V'lo Matargim. Reuven did something. You want to figure out what it is? You need to go study all the Mefarshim and figure that out. When the Pasuk says Birchas Kohanim, it needs to be understood carefully. So it can't be oversimplified, because that could give a misinterpretation of what it's supposed to be, a misimpression. But even if you're not going to translate it, it doesn't mean you distort it. It doesn't mean that you don't say that it exists. It means you have to present it in a different way. So you might say, and it's true, this is tricky now. Okay, you're a political candidate, you're running for office, you have a complicated story, you want to present it in a way that it will be understood correctly. Okay, but you can never live in a world where the facts disappear. The facts are always there. Ma'aser Reuven, it's Nikra. It must be read in the original Hebrew. If the Baal Kori skips it, so then he missed the laning. He has to go back. You can't skip it. It is part of the truth. But that doesn't mean that the truth has to be broadcast on Twitter in a way that won't be understood. It has to be understood in a more sophisticated way. And in conclusion, page number 15, when it comes to leadership, this has been, I would say, at least to me, when I was researching this, it was a bit of an eye-opening experience, because I'm always thinking, truth is truth. What do you mean? What's so complicated? But we saw there are different views of how to define truth. There are different levels of truth. Sometimes we need to sacrifice truth. Sometimes truth is not always the way that it has to be presented. But when Yisro comes to Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, Moshe Rabbeinu, you need help. You can't be the only judge. And a judge is not just a judge. Of course, a judge is a leader. He says to him, you need Anshe Chayel, Yirei Elokim, Anshe Emes. You need people of truth. Why? So Rashi says here in Parshas Yisro, in the underline, Elu Bale Havtacha. These are people of Havtacha, of confidence. Sheim Kedai Lismoch Al Devrayim. That it is worth relying on their words. Sha'al Yedei Kain, through that, Yiyu Devrayim Nishmoim. Once people trust them, others will listen to them. But if you break the trust, then the people won't listen. The people will not follow leaders who are not trustworthy. So Rashi says, you're going to look for a judge, you need a judge who is trustworthy. Because that trust, that's what's going to sustain their leadership. Because that person could be a judge, but if they're not trustworthy, they could be a leader, but they'll have no followers. Because ein dvarav nishmoim, no one's going to listen to them. We need leaders, and as tricky as it is, you started by saying maybe this is an oxymoron, as tricky as it is, the bottom line is, when it comes to life, and especially when it comes to leadership, truth has to play a primary role. You're right, sometimes we're juggling different values, but when it comes to leadership, if you're a shofet, Anshe Emes is core. Because if you erode the truth, then what leadership is there? There is no leadership. So we need to look for, as much as possible, we need to find Anshe Emes. We need to find great statesmen who are people, and women, people of trust, of real Emes. Now, how to define Emes? It's a good question. But especially in a leadership role, we should err on the side of calling it like we're seeing it, being able to deal with it, and not perpetuating some kind of non-Emes. So, halavai, in our own lives, we should be able to live up to this exacting standard of Emes. We should all be blessed with Emes.